Matt and Simon are really worried. They want me to say when the interview starts. So here we go. The interview is starting now.
Hi.
Hello, Ewan.
Hi. Right then. So, lanyard. Funky Web 2.0 spelling.
It is.
Little tiny small startup.
It is. There's two of us.
Basic idea.
Basic idea, help people find conferences, get more out of the conference than there, and afterwards we suck in all of the slides and video and everything and try and create a permanent archive of what happened there.
And able to be broken by Robert Scoble.
Well, we fixed that now.
Right, so you hit all the marks of a proper Web 2.0 app, haven't you, Simon?
I suppose so, yeah.
So, lanyard, not just for South By.
Absolutely.
It's also available for Boxing Day and other conferences as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Any kind of professional or hobbyist event where, like, it could be five people in a pub talking about jQuery to huge conventions like South By.
So here's a question. Do you have to be proactive and choose the conferences it goes into? Or if I just say, I'm going to Eurovision and there's a whole bundle of people who aren't geeks there but use Twitter, will it work for that without any intervention from you guys?
Yes. At the moment, we have over 6,500 events, and they're across, like, there's tech stuff.
86 different countries. And
you can tell they're recently married, can't you?
Yeah, we finish each other's sentences. we have a huge amount of events, and we pull your Twitter followers. There's some people you follow on Twitter, and we show you events that they're tracking or attending or speaking at, so we can give you recommendations just by knowing who you follow on Twitter. The likelihood is you're probably following speakers of various events. And people who are going to various events.
Yeah. So we have genealogy events, we have crime fiction events,
we have government, health,
education, and lots of tech stuff, because that's where the early adopters are.
So we started in tech because, you know, that's where we are, and we're slowly moving organically into different markets.
Now, I remember Lanyard starting up really slowly, and you've both been bouncing around trying to find stuff to do. Was this a necessity of invention that we really need to get something put down on paper now?
So what happened is we were on honeymoon.
Knowing Luke, careful touch from the wife.
So we went traveling for 6 months on honeymoon, and after 3 months we
did actually have a full 3 months of honeymoon
without doing a startup. This is very important.
Yeah, no one else is covering this. Everyone says we go on honeymoon and we build a startup. No, we went on honeymoon. We had three wonderful honeymoon months, which is a long honeymoon. And then we were ill in Casablanca, and it was Ramadan. We couldn't find anywhere to eat, and so we hired a flat, and we basically cooked ourselves better, hired a flat for 2 weeks, and built Lanyard, and launched it.
Yeah, that was the version one, which didn't
worked.
Do a lot, but it was useful enough that people started using it way more than we were expecting them to.
It took off a lot quicker than we thought it was going to, and we're incredibly excited about it.
So, being a startup, does that mean you're chasing funding, or you're doing friends and family? Where does it all fit now into, I hesitate to use the term, proper startup mode, but where?
So we're actually doing Y Combinator at the moment. So we've been out in the States for a couple of months. We're doing the whole startup boot camp kind of thing, which we applied for because Lanyard was taking off, and we were like, okay, we know how to build a product, we don't know how to build a business, let's go somewhere that can teach us that. And so we've spent the past 2.5 months immersed in how to raise money and how to start hiring people and all of the stuff that you need to turn something from a product into an actual company.
We've learned so much in just 3 months, and it's been fantastic. And, you know, we're now looking to kind of make Lanyard a kind of proper business. I mean, we've been working on it full, like, we were traveling after we launched it in Casablanca, working on it part-time, but since January we've been working on it full-time, and it's been really intense. And so we're looking to kind of, you know, take it to the next level.
So what's the one thing that you found surprising out of the go from product to business process?
Everything.
Like, as soon as you...
Okay, one different... Oh, no, I've got a far better idea than this one. Simon, you come over to here and you tell me
it
was.
Oh, no.
And we'll go back and check with Nat in 30 seconds.
Hold on, what was the question?
So what's the most surprising thing from product to business?
I think one of the most interesting things for me is we've had a whole bunch of people explain that what you do is you change from building a product to building the company that builds the product, and it's a totally different set of skills, which is all completely new to us. So it's kind of exciting that we're having to learn all of that. But I'd never really thought about it in terms of, you know, you're no longer doing product, you're doing engine that creates product as your new thing.
Right, now here comes the challenge. Back over to Nat. Nat, same question.
It's like blind date, right?
It's more like Mr. and Mrs. with Derek Beatty, but you're probably too young to go for that one. So, Simon can come in and listen to the embarrassing answer.
Okay.
What was the most surprising thing going from product to business?
Okay, so the most surprising thing. I think the amount of work that's involved, not just in building the product, so in doing the community management and kind of making sure everyone's happy, trying not to go ahead and build everything everyone asks for all the time, but also to kind of keep a direction for the product and whilst building the kind of machine that builds the product.
So at least we have that bit. So,
okay, well done. You've won this Breville sandwich maker.
Fantastic. Yay, that will sandwich. Feed us for weeks.
You still need the bread, though. You still need the bread that goes in the engine.
That's what Costco's for.
So the bread that does go into the engine that is lanyard, then. How? I mean, let's say that you were at a conference that wanted to use lanyard. What can you do over and above for a conference?
Well, we have we're basically the attendees coming to us. It's kind of grassroots. People are coming to Lanyard and saying they want to tell the world they're going to be attending this conference. And I think the most important thing that we can do for the conference organisers is keep a kind of continued conversation between them and the attendees, and also show them like who exactly is going to be at that conference. And we're going to build up that kind of stuff over time, but you know, what we've got at the moment is still pretty powerful.
Right, Simon, see, when your wife is talking, you can't just go, can I talk now? It doesn't work like that. 10 years, trust me.
Okay, well, we're 7 months?
She can interrupt you.
I'm still learning. No, I think the big thing we do for conference organisers right now is put them in front of more people, because the mechanism of Lanyard is you sign in with Twitter and we show you events that the people you follow are attending. So if as a conference organiser you add all of your speakers, then anyone who signs into our site and follows one of those people, and speakers tend to have a lot of people following them, they'll hear about your conference. And if they hear about your conference enough times, they may well buy a ticket and show up. So that's that's a big benefit for conference events.
And we have, like, when we show people the conferences that their friends are attending, you know, they're already thinking about, well, you know, what are my friends going to? So people are going to more events because of Lanyard.
Okay, there we go. Where can people sign up, join in, and enjoy the fun?
Lanyard.com. That's missing the last A. LANYRD.com.
Simon, great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you too.
Yep, that was great to talk to you, Ian.
There's a moment in every filmmaker's career that's like going all in with pocket deuces. And it's your premiere and the first live audience. James Moll had that last night.
I did.
And it must be tougher for you. Because, yes, you've got a built-in audience for this film, but they're probably even more critical of every single tiny flaw in the film and the storyline, because they know their band.
Oh my God, I'm so happy that I didn't meet you before this moment.
The toilets are just around the corner.
If I had met you and had this conversation before the screening last night, I certainly would have had a nervous breakdown.
So the film itself is the biography of the Foo Fighters, yeah, the band. How did the screening go last night? Let's start with that one.
I think the screening went phenomenally well. I'm accustomed to seeing the movie in a little tiny room, just me and the editor, and on a small screen on a computer. So to see it on the big screen last night and to hear people laughing and enjoying and getting it, it was awesome.
And talk about, you know, did you have that feeling of fan pressure? Because the Foo Fighters are, quite frankly, one of the biggest current bands on the planet.
Yeah, I did have the feeling of fan pressure for sure, but I became a fan during the process. I became a huge fan during the process. I mean, I was a fan before. I had their songs on my iPhone, you know, and I would listen to them often, but I'd never seen a live show. I didn't hear the band play live until I was sitting in Dave Grohl's garage listening to them record their 7th album, which is what we covered for this movie.
Listen, that sound... it's hundreds of fans' hearts breaking all over Texas.
Really?
You got to sit while they were recording the album.
Oh, it was a treat. It was amazing. I mean, these guys, they are amazing. They're incredible musicians, and it was an honor to be able to sit there. And also with Butch Vig, the producer of Nevermind, the Nirvana album, who had worked with Dave Grohl back then. You know, the fact that their career has sort of come full circle and Dave is working with Butch Vig again, and we're sitting in this tiny room, you know, recording this thing, and I got to be the guy there with the camera. So it was a pretty amazing experience.
So there's two ways we can go now. We can either go about what attracted you to the Foo Fighters and how you did the research, or what was it like being around the band while you were doing all the filming and recording, and did you affect the process? I'll give you the choice, given it's so late in South By. What would you prefer? Leading up to the film or during the film?
Interviewer
I know, but you're not getting to sit back and do all the work. No, I'm giving you the choice. You know, those people, I never went where I wanted to go in the interview. I'm giving you a chance here, James.
How long have you been doing this?
But hold on, I've got a timer on now. 2 minutes, 47, 48, 49.
I came to the movie because I've always wanted to make a rock documentary. I've always wanted to make a music documentary. A lot of my docs have, in the past, have been historical and really heavy subjects. And I just wanted to have fun. I just wanted to do something where I could just have a blast making it and know that I could sit with an audience and they could be laughing and having a good time. And taken away just pure entertainment, and I think with this I got that finally.
There's a lot of bands out there. Why did you decide on the Foo Fighters? Was the decision to make it the film first, then the Foo Fighters, or the Foo Fighters then the film?
No, I met with a producer named Nigel Sinclair, who has a company called Spitfire Pictures, and he had seen one of my films that I had made about the daughter of a Nazi perpetrator. So again, very 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 heavy subject. A film called Inheritance. And he wanted to meet me. So he sat with me and he says, "What do you want to do next?" I said, "Well, you know, I found out before meeting him, of course, I did my research, that they make a lot of rock documentaries." I said, "I've always wanted to make a rock documentary." I had interviewed with the Dixie Chicks management to make that the documentary that they made a couple of years ago, and I didn't get the gig. So, you know, it's like, I've always wanted to make one, but, you know, no one's going to hire me to make a rock documentary. I'm known as a, you know, historical... documentarian. And he said, "Do you like the Foo Fighters?" I said, "I love the Foo Fighters." He set up a meeting with me and Dave Grohl, and Dave and I sat there. It turned out to be a 3-hour meeting, and next thing you know, I've got my camera crew and I'm following them as they're making their 7th album and telling the complete definitive history of the Foo Fighters.
So the fact that you went with the definitive history, you know what I meant to say there, listeners, don't worry about it. Man, a lot of your historical documentary skills must have been used in this film. Was that surprising to you?
It is, a bit, yeah. I don't know how. You know, I did think at one point when I was interviewing each of the guys, because I decided for this film not to interview managers and other people in the industry who've had an influence on them, even though I like when I see that in documentaries, but I just thought, you know, let this be the story of the Foo Fighters as told by the Foo Fighters. And I want to hear from them, and I want to really get to know them. And during the interviews at one point, I thought, wow, this is getting kind of heavy, you know, because every now and then it got kind of serious. I'm like, this isn't really kind of maybe their brand, you know. This is what, and it did get kind of serious. But in the end, it turned out to be a great blend because, you know, the humor, the fun, the great music, it all comes through. But also in this film, we get a very honest glimpse as to who they are as people and some of the struggles that they've had to go through along the way.
They're also pretty possessive of their brand as well. So obviously they've chosen you as the director. What about, you know, when you get to the end of the filming process, you've got everything. You've got the great big filmmaker's jigsaw to assemble, and you can still drop the ball. But what did they do then? Were they completely hands off at that point? Did they ask to see, you know, just to check how everything was going as it went along the process?
I would have thought that they would want to see footage as we were going along, and they didn't. And at one point near the end, Dave started asking me questions. "So how's the editing going?" And, you know, I said, "Come check it out. Come see a cut." He said, No. I don't want to see it until it's completely finished. I'm like, okay. You know, and sure enough, he waited until I had a complete cut, and then he came in and watched it.
Any notes?
Very, very, very minor notes. Like, oh, you know, when, you know, I don't even remember what they were off the top of my head, but none of the notes were mandates. And he sent me a very, very genuine and really kind, you know, it was great, and a nice email, and said, "You know what, this may be the story of my life, but this is your film. And so, you know, I'll give you my thoughts on it, but you do ultimately what you want to do." And I did, but I gotta say some of his notes were pretty good.
was there any note where you looked at it and went, "I should have picked that up"? You know, that sort of, oh, yeah. There's a filmmaker one staring me right in the face and I missed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are notes that Dave gave me that other people gave me, and I thought, I knew it going in. What was I thinking? But you know, for the most part, we had such a short period of time to make the movie, and it was 4 months all in, basically. So that's a pretty quick, you know, considering there's over 1,000 hours of archival footage on these guys. They've been around for, Dave started the band 16 years ago. That wasn't much time to make the movie. But overall, I was pretty happy with the cut, pretty happy with the film is right now. I mean, watching it last night with the audience, and they're laughing and they're having a good time, and I'm looking at it thinking, oh, I've got to make that change. Oh, I wish I could go back in and make that change. But no, I shouldn't do that. At some point, you just got to let go.
The general release is coming up very soon, certainly general release in America, which is April the 5th, I recall.
April 5th, and theaters all over the country.
Are you going to go in and just take a little, any quick edits, or is it, that's it, it's locked down and away?
I will go in and make a couple of little quick edits if I'm permitted, budget permitting. But there's really nothing that I'm dying to go in and change. There's nothing that I watched on the screen that last night that I cringed at. So I'm very happy with the movie.
Yeah, we've got one screening left at South By. If people do want to go along and catch that, yep,
we do. I believe it's this Friday.
Yep, it's at the Ritz at 3 p.m., which is on 6th Street, so slap bang in the middle of music as well as in the middle of film. What about people outside of Southwest? It's going on general release, as you said. Where can people find out more information about the film?
At the Foo Fighters website, which is foofighters.com.
James, it's a fantastic mix of modern music and sort of deft eye for historical that we've seen from you previously. It's a great smashing time. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the interview.
Thank you.
South by Southwest might be about new bands. It's also about finding bands that I've been listening to for years and finally get to see live. If you didn't clash with the Elmo film.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, Elmo or Bug Girl? Elmo or... But that's just impossible. Anyway, enough of my scheduling problems. Joining me now, we have Clint.
G'day.
And Amber.
Hey, how's it going?
And you are Bug Girl.
Hey.
That's what we are.
So, let's face it, this is good old-fashioned rock and roll from Australia, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty much pub rock. Nothing more than that.
That's it. Interview over. You'll really like them. Okay, we'll do some more. You've had a good career progression so far. Australia started off there, moved into Austin now. Mm-hmm. This is the plan to make the big break, or it's just that you got kicked out of Australia and they never want to see you again?
I don't know. We're not really caring so much for any big break. We're just happy to be in a city where there's pubs and bands everywhere. It's kind of a bit like the Sydney pub scene back in the 80s. Like, there was a bar in every corner and there was always bands playing, and that's kind of what we're hoping to see and enjoy here, and basically use that as our base to tour out around America everywhere.
And the great news is it's now a working career.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Which, look, you know, there's not a lot of bands can say it. A lot of bands start to say, we'll make a career out of it, but you are there.
Yep. Yeah, we're happy with that. You know, it's taken a few years to work towards that, and we've been touring a whole lot, so it's kind of cool to settle down in a city. And since we've been touring for so many years, we've seen a lot of cities, and Austin's kind of appealed to us most, so we're enjoying just at least drinking 3 nights a week instead of 7 or 6.
And Austin itself, of course, home of South By, was that an attraction as well?
Not so much, but now that it's all happening here and we're here and doing it, it's kind of cool. It's like, yeah, it's a thing that's really sought after for a lot of bands, so to be here and just be living down the street is cool.
So we've got the shows coming up at South By for you guys. Is there any difference playing South By as opposed to just playing Austin?
Well, clearly there's a lot more people here with laminates and looking fancy and full of their own self-importance.
Okay, enough about me.
I don't know. You know, we're kind of getting used to the whole New Austin thing, calling it home. So it's been pretty exciting here. You know, you go down 6th Street or whatever, and there's always bands playing. I guess there's a bit more of a feeling of excitement here, even for the locals. The locals are really excited about South By, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think it seems pretty different to just a regular Austin show. Yeah, we're excited. We can't wait.
When are the shows going to be this year?
We're playing on Thursday at the Key Bar at 8 o'clock. And on Saturday at Trophies.
Which is the one that clashes with Elmo at what time?
At 1:30.
1:30.
Are you talking about Elmo? Are you talking about Tickle Me Elmo?
Yeah, Elmo! His film's on at the Paramount.
Oh, really?
So it literally is Elmo or Bank Girl. Aww.
Oh, wow, there you go.
So,
I might have been talking about St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh, no, you would have won on that one. That would have been an easy decision.
I'd definitely go see that.
Yeah, well, but you listen to your own stuff all the time. I just have it when it comes up and shuffle with the iPhone.
Oh, yeah, that's unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah. I haven't played Scotland yet either.
Shame. Yeah, I know.
Shame.
Right, anyway. Let's let everybody else hear what they're missing. We got a track off the recent album, Dirt in the Skirt. How are the sales going on that, by the way?
Bloody excellent, of course.
No, come on, go on record and say that it's going rubbish.
Yeah, we all know the truth, don't we? Nah, fucking excellent. We can't keep up with them, you know. Just like constantly in the factory, you know, making them, selling them, going through the roof. Yeah, heaps good.
So let's take one track off that then for our listeners. What are we going to listen to?
Turn the skirt.
Yeah, why not?
Go for the lead track.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Before we play that though, where can people find out more about the band?
www.buggirl.net and, you know, Facebook, find the band on there. I think it's just Facebook/TheBuggers.
It's a very coveted URL.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we are buggers.
Because we like to fuck people in the ass.
Yeah, I'm going to play the music now. You can tell all the nice, staid, interactive people have left, haven't you? Turn the skirt, Buggirl. Clinton, Amber, thanks as always.
Cheers, mate.
In the back of my car, dirt in the skirt. Bring your grandma. 669.